Short-term memories. You went down on August 26th, my 29th birthday. That's what the doctors and nurses kept calling it anyway. It didn't take long for me to understand that this is one of many ambiguous terms medical practitioners use to speak without saying anything. Jack and I got the call around 9 p.m. and drove through the night, buzzed on the champagne and bottles of beer we drank to celebrate the last year of my 20s, despite it being a Wednesday. In the middle of nowhere, Iowa, your doctor called to ask my permission to use life-saving measures while they transported you from the VA hospital in Des Moines to the neurotrauma unit at Mercy. I gave it, even though I promised you 8 years earlier that I'd never let you live in a vegetative state. DNR, you had me repeat to you over the phone. Do not resuscitate. I found you drenched by the rising sun, entangled in a menagerie of machinery. Fate found us together again at Mercy, as we were on that very day 29 years before, the hospital I was born in. Black circles of dried blood ringed your nostrils. When I asked why they hadn't bandaged your engorged bleeding ear, which had nearly tripled in size, a blonde nurse said, "She was down for a long time, maybe 8 hours. The blood coming from her ear is the least of our concerns." I had an overwhelming impulse to slap her, but buried my fingernails into my palm instead. "My little brother is on his way, for God's sake." I moistened a paper towel and eased the blackness away. A machine blew air into your lungs. A machine cleaned your kidneys, the first organs the body lets go of in an attempt to preserve the lungs, heart, and brain. Your body was the most impressive machine of all. The neurologist and nephrologist told me to go get some rest. I'd need it for making big decisions. Big stroke, big sister, I drank instead. Your MRI showed what they called shower emboli, 12 strokes at once. The glossy photograph of your brain looked like a series of constellations mapped in a wrinkled galaxy. The doctor said your heart collected these shooting stars for years, maybe decades before the Big Bang. Blood pumps in quicker than it can pump out, sloshing and coagulating in the meaty basin of your left ventricle. Atrial fibrillation, he called it, a result of habitual drug use. The doctor's tone carried a tinge of delicate inquiry, just in case the news he was delivering might come as a surprise. As if we could have possibly overlooked the last 20 years of our lost childhoods, or maybe missed your propensity to, repeatedly, choose meth over motherhood. Prison and halfway houses over our upper middle class suburb, crime over comfort. Dallas and I nodded. The doctor looked relieved. I wanted that image, my brother and I sitting there, hunched and raw, on the couch in your hospital room, to be used in DARE programs across the country, particularly in the Midwest, where methamphetamine continues to turn mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, and friends into the poison it's made of. The message: meth will come back to bite you, sometimes years after you quit using it. It destroys everything inside and out. Meth changed the beat of your heart. I prayed for the first time in years, prayed for your recovery, for your forgiveness, for relief from my opaque guilt for casting you out of my life. Jack read to you from your worn and heavily annotated Bible Cousin Angel brought from Spring Hill. His voice was low and soft, a relief from the sterile rhythmic reminder that you were not breathing on your own. Your bookmark was a picture I'd sent you from the night Jack asked me to marry him. It held the place of Corinthians 13:4-8. Love keeps no record of wrongs. For 10 days, this went on. Sooner or later, the doctor said, "This stroke will kill your mother." "Don't talk to me like I'm a child," I snapped, and immediately felt guilty, because I am a child, your child. We agreed to extubate. "She may not breathe on her own," they said. "You did." "She will be paralyzed on the left side of her body," they said. "You are not." "She will have substantial brain damage," they said. and you do. You've lost your ability to create new memories, anterograde amnesia, which is pretty much on par with the cruelty life has shown you. What if, I thought, you awoke with a blank slate, unburdened by the abuse of your childhood, the suicides of your brothers, the manic depression? What if we could meet between the wrinkles of time and start again?
Donna Brooks holds an MFA in creative writing from Queen's University in Charlotte. She was a 2013 finalist for the Iowa Review Award in Nonfiction and a 2013 shortlist finalist for the Santa Fe Writers Project Literary Award Program in Nonfiction. Her work has appeared in Mama Load magazine and is forthcoming in Brainchild magazine. She is also a co-creator of Siouxland Public Media's Check It Out. Donna read her story at the debut evening of Ode this past January. We will be listening to more stories from that event Wednesdays at 7:50 a.m. Next week, Ali Carson, the founder of Ode, must decide between a life prescribed and a life chosen.
But as I was sitting on the floor, hunched over the toilet at 4 a.m, nauseous like never before, I couldn't help but think there's got to be a better way to take care of myself.
Ode is a storytelling series where community members tell true stories on stage. It was founded by Ali Carson. The next Ode storytelling event will take place Wednesday, March 30th at 7 p.m. in ISU Design West. To learn more, find Ode Storytelling on Facebook. Find the stories we have broadcast on kwit.org. For Siouxland Public Media, I'm Mark Munger.